Introduce yourself, please.
I'm Marcy Francisco. I'm the senator for the 2nd District in the Senate in Kansas, which is Lawrence, Lecompton, and almost all of Jefferson County.
Welcome. Roll the open, Matt. This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka, the issues, and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go. Talking Ag today on the Statehouse Blend. Joining Marcy and me today in the KCUR production studio, John Pendleton, a farmer from Lawrence and an expert on asparagus, I am learning this morning. And Mike McGraw from our partners over at KCPT. And if I'm not mistaken, our first Pulitzer Prize winner here on the Blend. Also, as we sit here this morning in the studio, snowing outside, so particularly grateful for all of you to come in today. We're going to get tuchus deep in the legislature here pretty quick, but I want to start with two of my favorite questions for you, Marcy. Tell me about your husband and your pets and how you got hooked on politics.
My husband is Joe Bickford, plays in BRC Sound, so entertained us last night as part of Final Friday celebration in Lawrence. He's a longtime employee of the Kmart Distribution Center, a great bike rider, pretty good in the garden, and a great friend.
Yep. Pets?
We had a dog.
I feel like I'm going to be sad.
Fabulous dog, Muffin, very well trained. I think we're waiting until we have that time to put that into training, but it may be in the future.
And you have been in politics for as long as I've known your name, so give me the quick political resume.
Well, I was living in the Orion neighborhood, became a representative on the Community Development Block Grant Advisory Board at a meeting where we were trying to talk two people into running for city commission because there's lots of things we wanted to do in our neighborhood. Both of them declined. Someone turned to me and said, "You'd make a great commissioner, but you don't have any ties to Lawrence." I had grown up in Prairie Village. I'm a graduate of Shawnee Mission East. But I said, "What do you mean I don't have any ties to Lawrence? My great-grandfather was mayor in 1914.
I didn't know it was the family business.
It's a family business.
That is a trend here on State House Blend, getting people that were politics is the family biz.
So I served on the Lawrence City Commission from 79 to 83 and as mayor two of those years, 81 and 83. Once you've been in politics, then people expect you to be in politics. So when Senator Sandy Prager won her seat as their insurance commissioner, then people asked me if I would run for that seat. I did, and that was 10 years ago.
Great. Now, before we go around the table, I want to play a clip of tape from last week's State House Blend.
I've introduced a bill that that deals with property tax on agriculture land.
War on agriculture, people are saying.
Well, they can call it a war on agriculture. We're just asking them to pay somewhat like everyone else in the state does.
That's Jeff Melter, a Republican senator from Leawood. He was on last week's State House Blend. That's his bill that would change the way farm property is assessed. This has become a pretty big deal. So, John, I'm looking at you. What do you think?
Well, you know, anytime somebody says, "I'd like to kind of raise your taxes to help someone else's," you kind of pay attention. And in our local newspaper in Lawrence, there was an article about this bill. And to be quite honest, it was the first I'd heard about it. And to be quite honest, again, it's one of those things that if you're occupation is in agriculture and you do own some ground, you pay attention to what are your input costs in making a profit. And that's going to be something that if taxes are raised, it just makes it a little more difficult to to have a profit.
Yeah. Marcy, real quick. So tell me first your thoughts about this this bill. Does it impact more your bigger Western Kansas wheat and sorghum sort of farmers, or is everybody going to take a bite of this?
Actually, I think I've heard that it's going to impact most the farmers in Johnson County.
Really? Tell me why.
Because we're looking at the value of the land as opposed to use value of the land. And in Johnson County, it's more likely, since your land could become a development, that it's going to have a higher price tag.
So what you're saying is that because it could eventually turn into housing, it could turn into, it could disappear or turn transform into a suburb, that farmland is in danger of being taxed more?
Well, it's got a higher value. So what I think the bill looks at, and I don't even know, there hasn't been a hearing. This is just
right.
somebody's proposal. So haven't heard both sides or really seen the bill. But it's saying that we're going to replace the program that we have right now, which is use value, with something more that represents what the sale value of the land might be. I think that's my understanding. And so right now we have a really, I think, fairly thoughtful program or procedure that you go through. And in Kansas, we consider what the rents might be, what is the average in that area that people make off their land. So it is dependent on whether it's a wheat area or a corn area or an asparagus area. They look at soil type. So if you have better soil, you're going to pay a little more in property taxes. And one thing I learned that was quite interesting, we've had actually a tutorial, a short tutorial, for some of the legislators who are on the Rural Caucus to talk about how this use value is figured. And it was mentioned that it was put in place as sort of a compromise when Johnson County legislators wanted to do away with intangibles taxes statewide. So intangibles are taxes on what the money you have in your bank, stocks, bonds, CDs. So we have to remember that people have their wealth different places. So if we're going to start looking at what farmers are sitting on in terms of wealth in their land that is only available to them when they sell it, we ought to look at what wealth other people have in their bank accounts that's only really available to them when they withdraw it.
Yeah. We all done with the war on agriculture. Any other thoughts? Any other questions, Mike?
I'm fascinated with this effort to increase taxes on farmland, partly because I'm thinking if I were a Kansas farmer who believed in what the governor is trying to do by changing the tax structure to draw more businesses, I think I would wonder, all right, let's get rid of income taxes. That helps me. But if you're going to replace that and use increased property tax money to plug that budget hole, then net, how am I ahead net in the long run?
Yeah. John, respond to that. I mean, that seems like it seems like you probably are taking advantage of the new income tax rules in Kansas. I certainly am with my freelance income. But now, all of a sudden, how does that help you, as Mike suggests, if your property taxes are going to go up?
Probably one of the challenges would be we have very little control over the weather. Our day-to-day existence relies on highs, lows, temperature, wind, rain, drought, that sort of thing. And so from year to year, we're not exactly sure what our income is going to be. You know, we try and diversify. We try and do things to mediate fluctuation in income. But the reality is our lives pretty much are ruled by the weather. And so if your base expenses are going up, taxes, for instance, you know, if you have that just makes it a little bit more of a challenge. If it's
to income, you know, if you had a good year, then you can share a little bit more with the state, I guess. But I would say that it is kind of a challenge of increasing the expenses and not knowing what your income is going to be at the end of the year.
Right, right. Marcy?
I'm hoping that what we might do in the legislature is try to understand how much agriculture is bringing to the economy in terms of income, and then how much overall they're paying in taxes. And that's, I think, numbers that we haven't looked at yet and that would really help us understand where the balance is. The other thing I want to pay attention to, and I've talked not so much about this related to agriculture, but when we talk about replacing $100 million of income tax with $100 million of sales tax, sounds like, and really to the state, why does it make any difference? But to an individual taxpayer, if you happen to be one of those people that itemizes, all of a sudden, because you're paying less in income tax to Kansas, you're paying more in income tax on your federal return, and then you're still paying that sales tax. So do we really want to have a program that increases the overall amount of taxes that are being collected in Kansas and send more of them to the federal government? That hadn't been the basic premise that I thought we were trying to follow.
Right, that sort of balance that that the state has had in its taxation for a long time. There's some other things that I want to cover, but before we do that, because we have agriculture experts in the studio, and I know nothing about it except that I roast my asparagus as opposed to steaming it. Let's go around the table, Mike. You've got Marcy here. What else we need?
You know
to
what
aware?
I'd like to ask Marcy is, you know, my expertise in agriculture is, and I've never been a farmer, but I've studied agriculture quite a bit. And I'm fascinated with the beef industry and the importance of that industry to Kansas. And over the years, what I've seen in the beef industry is a very strong lobbying organization in Topeka, the Kansas Livestock Association, has successfully reduced their tax burden on beef producers over the years. And the one thing that fascinates me about what they've done is there used to be, if I'm not mistaken, and Marcy can correct me if I'm wrong, there used to be a dollar a head tax on cattle in Kansas, which was an important revenue stream for the state. The KLA lobbied to get rid of that tax, and at the same time, they became part of a federal program in which farmers are required to give a dollar a head to the KLA in order to promote beef. So basically, it appears to me that dollar in tax money has moved over to the KLA, a nonprofit lobbying organization, and now is being used to promote beef. And I'm wondering, is it time in Kansas that the state took that dollar back?
Especially now, since we're, you know, need every dollar we apparently can get our hands on, Marcy.
Well, I know that there's checkoff programs, not only for beef, but there's a corn and the soybean checkoff program. Some of them you can write in and get what you've paid per bushel back. But I think we want to let farmers and ranchers come up with voluntary programs that they can participate in. Certainly we want to be seeing some research done. On the other hand, that should not be at the expense of contributions to the state overall. So I don't think that happened since I've been there, but I will see what I can find out.
But so what I'm hearing you say is that the checkoff program is fine, marketing beef is fine, but it shouldn't cost the taxpayers of the state of Kansas. You shouldn't replace that checkoff, that dollar of tax money with a dollar that goes to an association. That's
right.
What I'm hearing you say.
The idea of that is that they can market it. You can have the program beef, what's for dinner. But if you are not collecting state taxes on that increased number of head that we're seeing in Kansas because people are responding to that marketing, it's really not helping us.
Right. Just one quick follow-up here. So, in fact, this marketing program, I mean, there is more beef production in Kansas now?
I don't know that there's more beef production in Kansas. I think, you know, we saw with the drought a lot of reduction in herds. I know that there's a program, is it Sunflower Supreme, where they're marketing heifers, you know, and we want to make sure that we're selling pregnant cows for people to increase their herds. But the marketing program is aimed at increasing consumption. I think the other side of that is we really need to look at our inspection programs. You know, we used to have state inspection, and a lot of small meat markets or meat processors. And we've been losing some of those. And the federal inspection system is a little bit different. We need to make sure we've got an inspection system that's providing the safety that we need and is accommodating those small markets.
So again, we've lost state inspectors, and this is because of budget concerns, because we've moved that money somewhere else?
Well, state inspectors can inspect beef as long as it doesn't leave Kansas. And I think those programs are pinched right now. And what I've heard small locker plants say is, you know, I'd kind of like to send beef outside of Kansas once in a while, but in order to get the federal meat inspection people to come in here, I've got to jump through a million hoops.
I see.
And so I think the major, the federal program, FSIS, part of the USDA, is so geared toward big factory production, and I'm talking 4,000 head a day or more, that they can't kind of get their head around inspecting a small locker and applying principles to a small operation that you wouldn't necessarily have to apply in a large operation.
All right. I'm thinking about moving on here. Before I do, John, one last thought or question before we move off of agriculture and onto something else?
Well, you know, just the beef topic, this is the industry that I actually grew up in, and in the early 80s. In Douglas County. Mm-hmm. My dad and I ran a small feedlot halfway between Lawrence and Eudora, and we lived through the change in the beef industry when the beef industry went to Western Kansas. It's one of those, what came first, irrigation for corn in Western Kansas, good or bad, you know, we can argue that. But irrigation created good corn production. You had feed to feed cattle in mega feedlots where the humidity is much better in Western Kansas. You have fewer people living in Western Kansas to have a mega feedlot. And then the mega packing plants replaced the ones that were in Emporia, Wichita, St. Joe, Omaha, Kansas City. You had all the regional. And so in my lifetime, we saw a shift from local to national and a local or region. And on the local basis, every single city had a small packer, a small little bitty butcher shop that you took care of one animal at a time. And so it, just in my lifetime, we have seen a huge, huge shift in how the food system worked. And you know, we're at a point in Douglas County right now where there's a real big push to get back to local food. And it's kind of interesting that, you know, we're trying to go full circle, but there's a reality as to cost of production and doing things on a large scale, how you can, I guess, make it cheaper. But then you have the offsets of freshness and food safety and things like that.
Yeah. Marcy?
We can't leave this topic without my mentioning that my part-time job in the fall is picking chestnuts at our local Chestnut Charlie. So I'm trying to do a little bit of farm work since I was one of the few members of the Ag Committee that otherwise didn't have those credentials.
I just want to point out that while you and your dad were raising cattle, which sounds ever so interesting, my dad and I were selling fake Christmas trees in Kansas City. So, yeah, that's the difference in the way we grew up. All right, I'm going to move on to education real quick. I was fascinated that there was a huge battle between almost every educator in Kansas and the conservative Kansas Policy Institute over how teachers were going to negotiate their contracts. The way the Kansas Policy Institute wanted to do it was to essentially say, you know what, you can negotiate salary and time, but that's it. Those bills moved through committee. But then when they got to the floor, something happened. And it looks like educators won. And Marcy, I want to get your thoughts on that.
Educators won.
At least
to
for now.
Keep, right. To keep some ability to add more items to negotiation. That happened on the floor in the House and actually in committee in the Senate. Mm-hmm. So I think we've got two bills moving forward. The House has a little more flexibility. I think they can add in five items.
Yes.
But, and then...
But I think what I want to hear you talk about is, I mean, I think most educators thought that that compromise legislation, right? KNEA, the School Board Association, Superintendents Association, the association that represents school administrators, spent 2 years negotiating this bill, and it looked like it was going to go down in flames. So what I want to hear from you is how did that get beaten back? How did the Kansas Policy Institute lose in Senate committee and on the floor of the House?
Well, you know, there's a lot of teachers in everyone's district. And we've been in contact with them over a number of issues. There were some big losses last year. There was the proposal to take funds from education, both through the change in how we calculate the local option budget and also just the governor announcing that he'd take money. So people are talking to their superintendents in their district. And I think this was just one more thing that there really wasn't any reason to move forward to limit those negotiations. You know, at the same time, we did have that awkward bill on education that talks about materials that are harmful to minors.
Teaching sex ed in
teaching class. Sex ed. And so right now there's an affirmative defense that if the school district has purchased the materials you're using, that should be enough of a defense and you don't go after the teacher. In that case, we really should be asking, why did the school board purchase those materials? But to take that defense that their school purchased materials away from the teacher is one more way that we are not respecting people in that profession. So I don't think it was a win overall this week, but certainly the negotiation piece was one I think I've heard really positive response to. And again, when the best thing in the legislature is when you're in a committee and there's a lot of different ideas to just say, everybody, you all go to the room. You figure it out. You come back and tell us, and we end up with better legislation.
Yeah, I want to get. I want to go around the table on education real quick. But first, I want to ask you: this, these two bills are going to be reconciled in a conference committee, correct?
Yes.
Could bad things happen from the point of view of educators in that conference committee?
It would be hard to, because you can't introduce new material that hasn't passed either house. So if another bill passes that's a different way to negotiate, then a bad thing could happen. But with just these two bills, they're so close that we're going to get good results.
John Pendleton from Lawrence, Kansas, thanks ever so much. Mike McGraw from KCPT, our partners just up the road there on Main Street, thank you for being here. State House Blend, you can hear us every Tuesday on Up to Date with my buddy Steve Kraske at 11 a.m. Anytime at kcur.org, just search for State House Blend. Matt Hodapp is the producer of the program. Marcy, in an effort to get to know you just a little bit better, we end the program with your favorite song. Call it out.
I was born in Kansas. That's it. I just, what's that called? I was born in Kansas.
It's bred in Kansas. It's the Kansas song, and I find myself humming that myself from time to time. I'm Sam Zeff. This is State House Blend. We'll see you next time.
I was born in Kansas. I was bred in Kansas. And when I get married, I'll be wed in Kansas.